each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, good afternoon, everyone. Father Troy's here. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood to wrinkle your brain, and I promise you that if your brain's not wrinkled by the end of this hour, then it will never be wrinkled, because my brain is being wrinkled even as I speak.
I don't know.
Trying to, you can be sure of it. I don't know what you're not sure of, but I'm sure of this. Diving into the great treasures of our Catholic faith will wrinkle your brain, because we live in a society that is so often contrary to, and we're constantly questioning and wondering, which is a good thing. I need to continue a theme that I started last week, and I'm afraid it's one of the most sticky topics that perhaps a theologian, a Catholic, even a theologian, Protestant, any theological thinker, Jewish, Buddhist, Muslim, anyone could dive into. But I'm going to invite you to dive into the sticky issue that surrounds the great controversies over the letter of St. James. Bet you didn't expect that, did you? You probably were thinking, all the scandals are swimming about us. Yes, they are. What are we going to do with the church? What are we going to do with our parishes? These are all big questions. They're big questions, but they're not as big as the question about the letter of St. James in the New Testament. How's that for starting to pique your curiosity, as it were, okay? And I'm saying this in the context of all the talk that we as people in the church... Yeah, okay.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
There we go. I'm bringing this up in the context of all the discussions we're having on how to make the church better, whether we're talking about pulling out of the sexual crisis that has reached into the hierarchy. Well, it hasn't just reached into the hierarchy. The veil has been pulled away, revealing the corruption in the hierarchy. Up until now, we've kind of assumed it was untouched. But that assumption is, sad to say, questioned in a big, huge way by certainly a lot of people. And not without good reason, I might add. So leave it at that. And then... I'm not going to leave it at that. The whole reason I want to tackle the great controversy surrounding the letter of St. James is because this all can help us separate the good and the bad, the better from the good, and the good from the evil, the right from the wrong, the heroic versus the ordinary. And I think that's another category. There's all these different categories, right, we use in our minds. And we think, obviously, in terms of right and wrong, which we should, although a lot of people, that's part of the problem, that those categories are gone. But the Catholic Church and its rich history has had a wider view of the situation of human endeavors, as we might say, not always just the difference between right and wrong, but the difference between heroic and good. Someone can be heroic with a bad past, right? Or someone can be good without a bad past and never, without a bad past and never really be heroic. Are you following me? Same would be true as the villains. Someone can be bad without being a real villain, and someone can be someone who was good can turn into a villain. All these different nuances as we try to address the arena of the relationship between morals and our moral thinking, our moral principles, our sins and our falls, our need for forgiveness and the grace that comes, and our faith. And the reason I put it in the context of the letter of St. James is because that's the letter that St. James is obviously arguing with someone. He's arguing with someone, but it's not a particular person in a particular town. If you know a little bit about the letter of St. James, it's called one of the Catholic epistles, which doesn't mean the other epistles are not Catholic or that it's only found in a Catholic Bible. What it means is that taking the word Catholic in its epistemological roots, meaning universal, it's addressed to the 12 tribes of Israel, which is kind of a code for everyone. It's not addressed to the people in Corinth. It's not addressed to the people in Romans. It's not addressed to the people in Philippi and all the rest of all the other epistles that are written to people in certain towns. It's addressed in a more universal way, and that's why it's called one of the Catholic apostles, one of the Catholic epistles. And so that means they to whom St. James is arguing against, it's not just a problem that exists in one area of the church, but it certainly, he senses that it's a common problem throughout all the new Christians, throughout all the new churches. And that's key for us today because as we struggle to try to make the church better, grow the church, avoid even more difficult and terrible crises, we need to get Catholicism right. As a matter of fact, I flock noted out. That's my way of saying tweeted out. I don't tweet, but I flock note. It's a service that I use in the church, a number of parishes and Catholic institutions. I suppose other non-Catholic institutions could certainly use it as well. But I think it's very well suited for Catholic parishes and Catholic institutions. By the way, too, if you want to receive a little message about the daily topic, when yours truly, Father Coyes, is here sharing with you brain-wrinkling Winds of Change Wednesdays, do send me an email. Send me an email at unlikeothernations@gmail.com, the three words together, no spaces, unlikeothernations@gmail.com, and I'll gladly put you in the flock notes so that you can get a little sense of the news that is coming. My flock noted message was the theme today was going to be real Catholicism and our efforts at truly evangelizing and its relationship with the second chapter of St. James' letter, especially where St. James is trying to hold back or trying to hold together. I'll put it this way. St. James is trying to do what I believe I'm trying to do today and what I think needs to be done, but I'm afraid not many are doing it. What was St. James doing then and what we need to do today is hold on to a connection, something that God has joined together that man should not put asunder. You've heard that phrase before, haven't you? And you probably say, ooh, I've heard that phrase before. That's what we hear at weddings. And what you're talking about is the connection between a man and a woman in holy matrimony. And, well, you'd be very right in realizing and recognizing those words come from the wedding. But there's also a beautiful sense of what God has put together. Man must not separate. That could be applied to the relationship between faith and works. Faith and works. That's what St. James was trying to hold together. These things go together, and we are not supposed to separate them. We desire to separate them because we are often, victims, but that's not the right word. Victims of immorality. We do wrong. Okay, let's just put it this way: most human beings do wrong. Most human beings have done immoral things, and it's not a pleasant thing to think about. We like to forget about them, and we like to move on, which is partly right, but partly wrong, because if we just keep forgetting about things and move on without learning that it really was wrong, maybe we do recognize it was wrong, but there's a great possibility of doing something wrong where you don't think it's wrong. And that's even a deeper problem, and that's what we're seeing more and more today. That's why the same-sex marriage crowd, those who are using homosexual relations as a rallying cry to show there is a strong sense of Christian love in their hearts because they are tolerant of someone else's, they don't want to say mistake. They're tolerant of someone else's lifestyle choice. So they, by removing the idea that it's a mistake or a sin or an immoral act, they find themselves thinking they are on moral high ground. But what they're doing and why it's so dangerous and why the church in its lackadaisical attitude is not helping is kind of baptizing that sense of a divorce. They're baptizing the divorce between faith and works in the classic sense that we find those terms and those words addressed and used in the second letter of James and the epistles. So I'm going to share. Okay.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Okay, well, I'm glad I did, but this is going to wrinkle your brain even more. I'm going to share with you a very interesting analogy, and I guarantee you it's going to wrinkle your brain, and because it's wrinkled my brain, and I'm a trained philosopher, theologian, you know. at least I play one on Wednesdays. Most of the time I baptize babies and conduct Holy Mass and all the rest and pay bills to keep churches alive and what have you. But anyways, I do have a bit of philosophy and theology behind me. And by tackling this issue of the relationship between faith and works, which we find in the second letter of James, I stumbled on a very, very interesting article by a fellow by the name of Aikens. What's his first name? James Aikens. James Aiken gives us this very interesting analogy, and I'm just going to say to you, because I'm going to have to come back with it, I'm going to have to come back to it, but I'm just going to throw it out here, and then we'll work our way back to it, okay, my friends? So you're going to have to stay with me the whole hour, okay? So if you can't stay with me, then you got to get the podcast, my friends. You got to get the podcast, and that's why you need to send me an email to unlikeothernations@gmail.com so I could send you a link with the podcast for the show. Okay, you got that? Thank you very much. In trying to come across, trying to solve the dilemma, we can call it almost the dilemma between Protestantism and Catholicism. And that's why I'm so passionate about this. And it's a common theme that I come back to here, Winds of Change, because the attempt to renew and save Catholicism and our Catholic parishes, if it's not real Catholicism, if we take our lead from Protestantism and the mistakes that are found in Protestantism, I'm afraid we're barking up the wrong tree. We're betting on the wrong horse. We're what other kind of analogy I can come up with? Anyways, okay. So Nick is begging for a little break here. This hour goes by way too fast. I'll share this little analogy with you, and then we're gonna work our way back to it. Okay. And then I gotta bring one of my favorite presidents, John Adams, into the fold here again. I think he's right on spot, and he's giving us some wisdom here that we need today. I'm Father Tom Coyes. I'm here sitting in for Father Anthony Bush. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Portions of the day's programming are reproduced by means of electrical transcriptions or tape recordings.
Get in touch with God.
Get in touch with God.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
You've got your radio turned on to Winds of Change, where you can hear about your faith and hear about today's culture through the lens of Christ's teachings with Father Anthony Bush and others. Monday through Friday at noon on AM 750. Keep Winds of Change on by going to ststandschurch.org and click on the radio tab to donate. And Winds of Change offers thanks for your donation.
The Winds of Change.
The Winds of Change.
On AM 750, WNDZ. And on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
St. Stanislaus Kostka is the sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, where you can enter into the presence of Christ 24/7. Every first Saturday afternoon will be a special opportunity for healing. At 4:30, bring your petitions for our Blessed Mother's intercession as we pray the Rosary. Then, at 5, we share the body of Christ in the Holy Mass. Also, at 5:30, a Spanish Mass, followed by a Eucharistic procession, adoration, the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and an anointing. Enter into the sacred space of St. Stanislaus Kostka and place yourself before Christ for healing. On first Saturday afternoon, starting at 4:30, find St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, 2 blocks north of Division, on Noble, just off the Kennedy in Chicago, and find peace and healing.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Father Coyes here with you once again, wrinkling your brain as I try to do each Wednesday. I'm swimming in deep waters, which reminds me of a phrase I heard at our Archdiocesan Summit. And it's one of the positive takeaways, although I was a bit critical of it last Wednesday, and the topic of today is partly why I was a bit critical of it. But one of the positive takeaways I had from it was that it was said we need to develop shallow water ministry. We need to invite people into shallow water before we can get them to swim in deep water. I like that analogy. I think we all kind of do it. But I was a little put off because I was hoping that we'd get to deep water. We had two full days of a big conference, and it was primarily church leadership. It was priests and staff and selected leaders of the parish, folks for whom you would think it would be a good thing to swim in the deep waters and discuss some of the deep matters. But I found the 2 days almost entirely in the kiddie pool. And it just sort of left me with a negative feeling, sort of thinking that we have to approach that crowd. And there were about 2,500 of us, of the leaders of the church, that the leaders of the church had to keep the conference in the kiddie pool. And it sort of makes me question or makes me think that the leaders don't want to go into the deep water. They're afraid of the deep water themselves. They don't believe in the truths that we come to when we take on the more challenging, controversial issues of the church. But anyways, be that as it may, this radio show, and quite often on the Winds of Change, this is not the kiddie pool. I just want you to know that. This is not the kiddie pool. You're swimming with the lifeguards, all right? And if you really want to be a great swimmer, you got to test yourself at times. So thanks for tuning into the Winds of Change. And as I say, a lot of times the themes that are developed here need to be digested and often. Yeah, they do. You can't just listen while you're driving and concentrating on how you're going to make your next buck or singing a song in your mind. Anyways, you know what I'm saying. Okay, back to the the deep water topic of the relationship between faith and works that is especially part of the letter of St. James in the New Testament. And I want you to put over that controversy, the controversy of St. James, and those who look at this letter from the New Testament. Obviously, it's named after St. James, and being at a parish called St. James, one of the 12 apostles, I kind of thinking, hey, this is the guy for whom my parish was named, even though there's two apostles, James. The biblical scholars opine that it probably was a third James that was not one of the 12. In the Bible, you do hear references to James, the brother of the Lord. And when that James, the brother of the Lord, is brought up, it's quite, I don't know if it, how many times, two or three times only, but it's not usually in the usual way that the list of apostles is brought up. So this James, brother of the Lord, definitely was the leader of the Christians of Jerusalem, and he definitely was stoned. And therefore, there's a bit of confusion and controversy. I'm going to leave that part of biblical scholarship to another day, and to ultimately it doesn't change the points that I'm trying to make and that the point that the letter is making, and that is that there's this marriage, there's this bond that God put together between having faith in God and doing the right thing. In other words, doing good works. So I want to put that ancient language and that ancient situation over the foil of what we're hearing today. And what are we hearing today? We don't hear the debate exactly in those terms, but what we hear today is, don't talk about morality if you want to get people into the church or you want them to start to love God. First, you have to talk about their relationship with Jesus. And so in the context of this modern day pastoral strategy, I guess we could call it that, let us put let us put having a relationship with Jesus unparalleled to what St. James was pointing to when he talks about faith moral principles, standing up for moral principles, living a moral life in terms of works. So those two things. So we'll say, I'll kind of translate St. James by saying, show me your relationship with Jesus without moral goodness, and I'll show you my moral principles that have a relationship that are founded on or that exhibit my relationship with Jesus. So that's what the story is. That dilemma, okay, we got the reality of faith. We got the reality of morals or the reality of a relationship with Jesus paralleled with the reality of being a good person. We'll just put it that way, okay? This marvelous little article on the letter of St. James by James Akins, you can find it on, I believe it's on EWTN website and their content. It was posted there. I think I found it there. Or just Google or Bing. Everybody says go Google something. I try to Bing things because I don't trust Google as much. So I often search things on Bing, bing.com. They have beautiful nature pictures instead of those always politically correct cartoons that they make the word Google out of. Be that as it may. James Akins brings up this analogy, okay, between the reality of faith and the reality of works, with the idea of a brick and the idea of straw. All right, he's trying to criticize. Whoa. Okay, there you go.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Okay, get this in your mind. Get this bigger. Faith is to bricks what straw is to morals. Okay, so he's going to try, because he's trying to critique the critique of Catholicism, obviously, because most of the critique of Catholicism comes strongest from Protestant theologians. I say most of, because more and more I find the same Protestant critique of this Catholic important point is coming from Catholics as well. Beware, Will Robinson, when Catholic thinkers and teachers and what are making this same mistake. So he goes, the interpretation, one way that the Protestant thinkers are trying to criticize St. James is, and criticize the Catholic interpretation of St. James, is by saying that St. James, when he says faith, he doesn't really mean real faith. He means fake faith, to coin a phrase like fake news that we hear a lot today. And that's sort of a good analogy. We all want news. Most people like to listen to the news, but we don't want fake news and all the rest. And so that this phrase that President Trump has coined, and he's done that a number of times, and I got to confess that
my Lord,
he's having
such destruction.
Yeah, that the quote, biased, liberal, secular, leftist media leadership has destroyed news. And so I'm worried about the same thing ruining real Catholicism. Okay, so they say that St. James didn't mean real faith, he means fake faith, or some theologians have called it dead faith. Or false faith, those kind of, it doesn't make sense. And James Akins does a beautiful job at just, if that were the true interpretation of St. James, and you replaced the word faith with fake faith or false faith or dead faith, none of his sentence, none of his verses would make any sense at all. And so he kind of dismisses that. So I just want to read this part of it. This approach mistakenly locates the source of the deadness of the faith in the faith itself. Okay, let me start that again. this approach, the approach that says James, when using the word faith, doesn't really mean faith, he means dead faith. It mistakenly locates the source of the deadness in the faith itself. In other words, remember what St. James says, faith without works is dead. And so, faith without works is dead. So the Protestants are trying to say that the reason the faith is dead is because it's a dead faith. and James Aikens, I think, beautifully, but this is brain wrinkling to the this is brain wrinkling squared, or even more than that.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
No, you got to hold on, because you're going to wrinkle it more here. Okay, we're going to another break. Okay, well let me put this out, and then we'll come right back. Because he says, this is not what James means, or James even says. James says, faith, at least the kind discussed in this passage, he says, faith is dead if it does not have works. He does not say that dead faith is without works. Okay, now, you almost have to write this down for it to make sense, To be perfectly honest, I as a trained philosophical moral theologian need to study it, dwell on it. But what he's saying is a beautiful, beautiful point that opens my eyes, and I hope your eyes, to the air that our present church is wallowing in. Say this again. What St. James says, faith is dead if it does not have works, okay? Faith is dead if it doesn't have works. He is not saying that dead faith is without works, okay? Now, I thought of, when I read that, the analogy of the dead parrot in the British comedy. Remember that... where a man goes in and buys a parrot, and the parrot's dead, and he walks out with it, and he comes back to the owner of the store, and he says, "You sold me a parrot that's dead." And the owner of the store says, "No, it isn't." And he says, "Yes, it is. Look." He pulls out the parrot, and it's dead. He goes, "He's not dead. He's just sleeping." And he goes, "No, it's..." He just denies, the reality of the dead parrot. We're going to come back to this after this break. Whether we use the parrot or the brick, we got to see this subtle but very important distinction, okay, my friends? It will open your eyes. It will help us see why the Catholic Church is following the Protestant approach to religion to our own demise if we don't correct it. See what I'm saying? Okay, well, good. I'm Father Tom Coyes, sitting in for Father Anthony Bush. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is the official sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Founded by Polish immigrants in the late 1800s, this historic church is more commonly known as St. Stan's. One church, many cultures, in that masses are held in English, Spanish, and Polish. The church is two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. St. Stan's has been so prominent in the history of the church in Chicago that the Kennedy Expressway was even built around it. St. Stan's is easy to get to. It is the sanctuary for quiet prayer before the celebrated iconic monstrance. For Mass and confession times and special events, please visit our new website at ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org. And while you're on the homepage, feel free to click on the Donations tab to help in the continuing restoration of St. Stan's.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
How long has it been since you have been to church? Busy schedule? Work? Or just lost interest? To be Catholic is not just merely attending Mass as just another weekend activity to be checked off the to-do list. Participation in the sacred liturgy gives you the opportunity to be intimately connected to Christ through the Holy Eucharist. You can also cleanse yourself of sin through the sacrament of reconciliation as a baptized Catholic. Come before the iconic monstrance to be in Christ's presence in the sacred silence of the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. St. Stan's is just off the Kennedy, 2 blocks north of Division on Noble. Come back to Christ through the sacred liturgy and his gift of the sacraments at St. Stan's.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Father Tom Kois here, trying to lead us into the light and to the truth and the way, into the heart and mind of Jesus Christ, into the depth of the infinite wisdom of Almighty God. How's that for a little brain teaser? So before I left, and I got to remind myself, remind you to bring in John Adams on these important points. Okay, I will. I'll get back to that. But first, I need to share with you the analogy of the brick. I started with the analogy of the dead parrot. I can maybe develop that a little bit too, but the brick is beautiful, and that's what James Aikens uses, trying to explain the mistake that the Protestant theologians make when they try to take St. James to task and try to say that this is not one of the best passages in the Bible. You'll never find a Protestant teaching his congregation to memorize James chapter 2, verse 14 and following. But I'm going to we need to concentrate on it because it is a very key. Because it has to do with psychology and spirituality, it has to do with our intimate moral lives, which are very difficult. And when we don't want to deal with these things, when we think we don't want to repent, we don't want to say we were wrong, we want to hold on to at least feeling we are right, and or even if we sort of know we're wrong, we don't want to have to confess it, we don't want to have to admit it. We just want to forget about it. But that's not a full, a recovery, as it were. We need that recovering of the sense of righteousness. It's not that a good, holy, wise saint has never sinned. It's that a good, holy, wise saint knows what a sin is and what a sin isn't, and what virtue is and what heroic love is, and what just maybe the ordinary life of the get-by Catholic or even Christian is like. So, okay, are you ready for the brick? he says this, there is a big difference between the two statements, just as there's a big difference between saying that bricks without straw are useless and saying that useless bricks are those which are without straws. Okay, going to back up here again, because I know this is a challenge. And really write it down if you have to, and just take it to prayer. Take it and think about this, because he's pointing out something very, very important. He's saying, St. James said faith, real faith, real true faith, not fake faith, not dead faith. Faith is dead if it does not have works. Faith is dead if it does not have works. He does not say that dead faith is without works. What the heck is the difference between those two statements? They sound alike, right? They sound like you're just saying the same things in reverse order, right? Yeah, it sounds that way, but they're not. And the brick analogy will help us understand the difference. He says, let us say we are brickmakers, and we know that good bricks, that straw helps to make good bricks. I'm sure he's just using the analogy because it comes from the Old Testament, when the Israelites had to make bricks for the Egyptians. And when the Egyptians said, you will make twice as many bricks, but half as much straw, the Israelites complained all the more bitterly and said, that's impossible. So anyways, we got the context of the bricks and the straws, right? So bricks without straw are useless. Try to make a brick. You don't put straw in it. The brick's going to be useless. Correct? Correct. But that's not the same as saying useless bricks are those which are without straw. Okay? Useless bricks are those that are without straw. Okay, now my mind, and maybe your mind goes sort of like mine, I'm thinking, hey, well, I think I'm getting straw is one of the ingredients that goes to making up a good brick, correct? Correct. What else do you need? You need mud. So you need, you could easily say bricks without mud are useless. If you try to make a brick just by squishing straw together, nothing holds it. And if you modernize it, of course we don't, pretty sure we don't use straw to make bricks anymore. We use all sorts of other kinds of ingredients like sand and pebbles and, you know, rock material that is brought together by some kind of stick-together stuff. A bitumen, as it said in the Old Testament. So I'm just, the word mud is sort of the ancient word for any kind of coagulant or adhesive that holds this stuff together. Again, I'm getting too far afoot on the technicalities of brick making, but it is related to it. The thing that's important here is to catch an important logical mistake. It's a logical mistake that Protestants, and I'm saying now, many, many Catholics are making if we don't get St. James right. Okay? So, again, bricks without straw are useless. Going back into our mind. Okay, here's the foreman telling the brickmakers to make a bunch of bricks. They make a bunch of bricks, but they don't put straw in it, or they put very little straw in it. They bring the bricks over, they put them in the oven, they're hardened, and lo and behold, you start building a house with them, and they are useless because they'll crumble right as soon as you put them together, put a little pressure on them, okay? You got that? Yes. Bricks without straw are useless. It's very true. But it's not the same as saying useless bricks are those which are without straw. How can you interpret that? Well, let us say, in order to find the wrongness of that statement, useless bricks are those which are without straws. You could say, okay, if you're going to say that statement is wrong, we're going to say, oh, do you mean bricks that useless, a brick with straw could be useless? Okay, here's a brick, it has straw. And let us even expand it to the idea that it has all the ingredients you need. But that's part of the logical insight, just not to assume that. But even if you did assume it, that here's a brick. It has the straw, it has the mud, it has everything going for it. Are you saying that straw, that brick, with everything going for it, can be a useless brick? A good bricklayer might say, you got that right, man. A good bricklayer will say, that is useless. That brick you have, it has the straw, it has the mud, it has all the right ingredients, but it's useless to me. How can you say it's useless to me? Well, because it's the wrong size. Right? I'm building a wall here, and you're giving me a 4-foot by 2-foot brick, and I just need a 1-foot by 6-inch brick. You follow me?
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Oh, good. If your brain was wrinkled, your sense of logic is high. Or one could say, let us say it's not the wrong size, but here's a brick. It has straw. It has the mud. It has everything it needs. And you're going to tell me that it's a useless brick? It's the right size, even. And the bricklayer says, yes, it's useless because it's green. And I'm building a wall with yellow bricks. It's the wrong color. So you get the point. And this is the logic point. And here's how comes out into a logical formulation, if you've ever had good, strong, logical reasoning. This is not divine revelation. These are that's the logic that comes from working with bricks, you know. Wait a minute. You're giving me useless bricks. You can just see a lawsuit coming up on this. I sold you a whole pallet of bricks. This is kind of on my mind because we just put in a little patio at our church and we had to order all the bricks and all this. And the one who sold us the bricks, they say, hey, those were good bricks. We could say, well, to me, they're useless. Why are they useless? They are good bricks. Yes, they are good bricks, but they're useless to me because I need brown ones, and those are green. Or their shape is completely different, and I can't put them in with the bricks that I already have. There's this logic that people who work with their hands, there's this logic in the practical world that spills up or bubbles up into the great good theology and good theology. That's one of the reasons why I heard that young men who study engineering in college after young men who study philosophy and already kind of have a desire to be a priest, they of course are the most appropriate kind of college student to go into the priesthood. But high on the list of college students who go into the priesthood are engineer students. Isn't that interesting? I've heard that a number of times. Why? Because there's this certain dealing with truth, raw, simple truth that you can't get away from, that helps you search for. And once you discover a true God, you see how important the true God is. So in the logical sense, you know how in logic, when people say, mind your P's and Q's, right? We have that phrase sometimes, mind your P's and Q's. That usually means mind your business. But it comes from the Aristotelian logic. When you study logic, you can say P is to Q as R is to S. And they use P's and Q's all the time. So X without Y is Z. Okay, X without Y is Z. But that's different from saying Z is X. X is without Y. Okay, I got to unpack this. I'll come back here again. We're getting close. I reminded myself about John Adams and why I think he's a key figure in trying to help us recover not only American culture, but our Catholic faith, even though he wasn't Catholic, okay? God love you. I'm Father Tom Coyes. You're listening to listeners-supported Winds of Change, and we really mean that. God help those who are, God bless you for those who can help keep Winds of Change on the air. I'm Father Tom Coyes. This is AM 750 WNDZ.
Sometimes in life, we are confronted with the tyranny of choice. I know. Stop or go. Hot or cold. Up or down. This way or that way. You can contribute to Winds of Change one way or the other. One way is to go to windsofchangeshow.com. Then click on Support Winds of Change Show in the upper right-hand corner of the page. The other is to go to ststandschurch.org and click on the radio tab to make your donation one way or the other.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is the official sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Founded by Polish immigrants in the late 1800s, this historic church is more commonly known as St. Stan's. One church, many cultures, in that masses are held in English, Spanish, and Polish. The church is two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. St. Stan's has been so prominent in the history of the church in Chicago that the Kennedy Expressway was even built around it. St. Stan's is easy to get to. It is the sanctuary for quiet prayer before the celebrated iconic monstrance. For Mass and confession times and special events, please visit our new website at ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org. And while you're on the homepage, feel free to click on the donations tab to help in the continuing restoration of St. Stan's.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. This radio station is located here in beautiful, almost downtown Chicago, St. Stanislaus Kostka. It's one of those big, old, beautiful churches that were built by the wonderful people of days gone by, mostly Polish here. And it needs so much upkeep. God bless you for those who can help St. Stan's. And all the churches that are in need. God love you for whatever sacrifices you could make to keep our churches strong and alive, as it were. No one is denying that there are challenges facing us. And if it's only seen as a challenge of finance or money, then, of course, here's something that I worry about, my friends. Are there more strong, faithful, Orthodox, rich Catholics, or strong, faithful, or should I say, more progressive, liberal, dissenting, rich Catholics? I'm afraid that in the realm, in the group of rich Catholics, there are more that are in the more liberal camp than in the conservative camp. So if it's only a money situation and those who have the most money win, then the true Catholic faith is in trouble. So we got to do what we can, mustering together. Now we're back to this controversy that we find in St. James, and I'm saying it's alive in the church today. St. James uses the terms faith and works. I think the modern parallel is the contrast or the pitting against each other, the two concepts, a relationship with Jesus and morality. It's my contention that we shouldn't pit them against each other. We need to work to keep them together. St. James had to work to keep them together because they seemed to naturally separate and fall apart. So without a conscious effort to keep them together, they will naturally fall apart. And that's what is a strong negative factor in our church today. So let's go back here. So I don't know that I completely convinced all of you of the beautiful insight that is made by St. James and also by James Akins. His name is spelled A-K-I-N-S, Akins, or Atkins. Anyways, he's making it, and I'm making it, we're all making it. And so he's saying, listen to what St. James is saying and know what he's not saying. And that's the important thing. A brick is useless for many reasons, not just because it doesn't have straw or the right ingredients, or it's not made properly. Although, if you say bricks without straw are useless, you might draw the conclusion that all you need to make a good brick is straw, and that's not right. And that's kind of the... Can you translate that in your mind? Can you say faith without good works? You might make the mistake of saying, faith, all you need to have good faith is to have good works. See, that's what we want to be able to affirm, right? But the analogy of the brick is beautiful because it does show you that X without Y is Z. It's not the same as Z is X, therefore X is without Y. Okay, let's put that back together. We'll try another. X without Y is Z in the formulation. A brick without straw is useless. Okay, X equals brick. Y equals a brick with straw. And Z, meaning the conclusion, useless. X, Y, Z, okay? So we can turn that into the form Z, useless, is X. Useless is a brick. The brick is without straw. Useless is the brick. The brick is without straw. Okay? Useless is the brick. I look at my brick in my hand and I declare, useless is this brick. Useless is brick. If you put it into a dialogue terms, you, my friend, brick, are useless. Brick, you are without straw. Okay, or if you want to put it into legalese and you're trying to make this into a legal argument, going back to someone who bought a whole bunch of bricks from a brickmaker, and you are a house builder, and you are saying, you're going back to the store that you bought the bricks at, and you're saying, look it, this brick doesn't have sand. Or you might say, this brick doesn't have the right kind of coagulant. Well, no, that's useless is brick. We don't get to the coagulant, or we don't get to the what's the straw until afterwards. Useless is brick. I go back, I bring my brick to the store where I bought it, I put it on the counter, and I tell the owner of the store, useless is brick. Like a caveman pointing down. Brick is useless. You're someone who doesn't speak English very well. You know how they sometimes leave out the thes and the articles and all the rest. Me, Tarzan. You, Jane. Brick is useless. And then the person, and then I say again to the, owner, useless is without straw. Useless is without this certain kind of sand. Let us say you wanted Hawaiian sand instead of Alaskan sand, if there's such a difference. People who make bricks could probably fill in those blanks much better than I can, but you get the point. And then the owner of the store would be able to say, you asked for the kind of brick I sold you. It had Alaskan sand in it. I don't know whether it was going to be useful for you or not. Or let's go with color. Let's just stay with color, and that might make it a little easier. Useless. Useless is brick. And then brick is without green. Useless is without yellow. And so, oh my goodness, can't believe that. All right. So I hope this brain wrinkling has introduced you to this subtle point of how the Catholic faith is all about morality and good works. It doesn't pit them against each other, but it doesn't equate them either. Okay, that's maybe I'll end with that, and I have to come back, okay? Thanks for tuning in. I'm Father Tom Coyes. You've been listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
What makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Can you see? The winds have changed. each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time.